Can you hear the music?
I can hear it.
Oh yeah. A lot of people can't. Gets me fucking fired up. Had this made.
Good.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick, and shout out to Senjin Boychuk. Man, that song just keeps getting better and better and better. We've been going at it for like a year now or more. So I'm finding Senjin everywhere on the socials, man. He's incredible. You know, he's on YouTube and TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and just crushing it. And, you know, on today's episode, I'm pretty excited. We've been working on this one for a while. You know, we got Damien, the Powerline pilot. What's up, man?
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Oh, good, man. I'm just the first time recording in this camp. You know, like I got a new job, and like I haven't recorded a podcast in this camp yet. And anyone that knows, camps are like razor thin walls, right? I know the guy on this side of me, he's on nights. I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know what's going on down the hall, but like, this is a first thing. So we'll see how it goes. And we'll see if there's any bangs on the door or any upset people. So.
Yeah, and hopefully the old Wi-Fi signal keeps going good for you. So.
Yeah, that's another thing with camp, man, camp Wi-Fi. You know, you're sharing the Wi-Fi with like 3,000 people, right? Or sometimes less, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more, right? And yeah,
I'm sure the guy's getting off hitch or trying to get little extra megabytes in there too, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. And you know what's crazy about that, we discovered at the last camp I was at, we discovered you could see who's watching what, right? It shows, like, you know, Starlink, it shows like on what device. Okay, so let's say on my laptop I'm watching like the hub, right? I'm watching like guy on girl on fucking dog action or some shit, and fucking like they're like, Dick's laptop is watching this, right? We discovered that it was like 80% of the bandwidth was being used in the back corner of camp.
Oh shit. And so they have that level of accuracy, do they?
Yeah, man, it was wild, dude. It was crazy, you know. How long are you gonna spend in a camp room for? You better be bringing all the lotion with you, you know. Like,
I'm sure it can get pretty lonely out there.
Oh shit, sometimes, man. So how you been, man?
Good, good. I mean, we've been trying to do this little podcast for a while, man. So I've been kind of. I'm kind of now at the stage where I'm co-owner of a company. So it's not just a steady schedule on the road anymore. It's kind of like, you know, running a company and then trying to be out flying at the same time and doing all that stuff. So it's changed up. It's for the better, but it's tough to schedule stuff. So sometimes. But.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Dude, I knew the first time that I met you, like when I was introduced into the troll group, and I saw your content, I saw your name, and I'm like, Powerline pilot, that's badass, right? And so I went and I looked at your content. I'm like, right away, I knew. I'm like, I gotta get this guy on my podcast. You know, like Blue Collar Podcast. How badass is this guy's job, man? Like, he's got, like, you know, I've seen it. I've watched it happen, but I've never, you know, talked to one before. I've never, like, you know, I've never interacted. I've just seen them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very visible job for sure. It's like, it's one of those things where if you've seen it happen at the side of a highway or, you know, driving down the road and you see a helicopter next to a power line, everybody stops to have a look at it. You know, it's like, what the hell's going on here? So it can get kind of funny at times. We get a lot of calls. People think we're stuck in power lines and cops show up and it's like, are you guys all right? And we're like, yeah, no, we're fine. It's just a regular day. But yeah, man, it's a crazy job. It's, you know, one of those jobs where I think it takes a while to get into it, but you have to want to get into it. You know, you see it early on, and you kind of focus your career at that. And yeah, it's been phenomenal. I've been at this work for about 12 years now. And bounced around a couple of different companies and all that stuff, but you know, like everybody does, and to find the right fitting, but it's been fun. I've met some of the best people I've ever met in my life in this career, and it's been super satisfying career. You know, it's cool when you drive by power lines, you drive by areas with your family, and you're like, oh, I built that, and your family doesn't really care, but you know, it's satisfying to see that you can, that you've, you know, you've put wires up in the air, you've put lines up in the air, and it's you've been a part of that. So that's cool. So
gotta stop telling your family and stop telling your friends and strangers what you do, you know, like
it usually works out better. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, man, hey, your kid's just like playing their like fucking Game Boy or some shit. I do that. I don't care, dad. You like see a random, like grown man on the street. Hey, look what I do. They're just like,
I landed at the house one time, and I we were, I think it was like the fucking height of COVID, and we were like, all right, well, we got to, we were flying out of my house, and we were doing a bunch of inspections on the East Coast over here looking at power lines. So we had to fly over to Lawrence Airport near Boston, and we were literally flying over there. And then flying back. So we weren't doing any work. But I was like to my kid, I was like, hey, you want to go for a ride in the helicopter? And she was like, okay. And then, you know, flying back, she was just like so bored. She's like, yeah, this is all right. And, you know, it's like most people, like I've always wanted to go for a ride in a helicopter, but she's like, this is just normal, I guess. But yeah, Jesus. It's fun, man. It's interesting because, you know, I want to show her the enthusiasm for it, but then she really, it's not in her wheelhouse. She doesn't really care. So, but
man, you gotta forgive me for a second, man. Like I just gotta, I'm just getting over a cold. My allergy is fucking slamming me. One sec here.
Get after, man. Get after it.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Because I haven't used any Kleenex in a couple days, right? Like my cold is gone. It's nice, you know. I'm like finally leaving the Kleenex box alone, and then my eyes are just fucking itchy and watering out, right? And it's like, can't catch a break here.
I hear you. Well, it's been like this. I guess there's a lot of allergies and shit going around. It's like the weather's just been crazy at the moment, man. It's like we're kind of on standby right now to hopefully go down and help in Florida. We have an aircraft station down in Pensacola right now, but yeah, that it's just the weather, man. Between these last two hurricanes, and everybody's got the same issues going on. Everybody's got sniffles going on, and they're stuffed up, and it's like it's weird. The weather's been crazy at the moment for sure. So
yeah. So how did you said you've been in it for 12 years? Like, let's take it back just a little bit, man. Like, you're sure. From Ireland. You can hear the Irish in your voice, eh? Like you. You're from Ireland. Like, when did you come over? Like, you know, and why?
Yeah. So I came over back in 2007. I started flying the end of 2005 in Ireland, and I did my private license over there, and kind of, you know, I wasn't really sure where it was going, but it was like, flying helicopters would be fun to do. I was on a mountain rescue team back in Ireland for 4 years, and we used to work a lot with the Coast Guard. So I wear glasses. My vision kind of sucks, but it's like, so I was like, I'll never be a pilot. You know, I was one of these people. It's like, I didn't really know anything about it. So, ended up getting some flight lessons, I'll take it back even a little further. I was sitting out back in my house one day with my dad, and we were drinking a beer, and the Coast Guard helicopter flew overhead. And in Ireland, like, it's not like militarized like it is in the States. I'm not sure how it is in Canada, but it's kind of like it's all civilian operated. So
I'm not sure what it's like up here either.
Yeah. I'm not sure. But so they flew overhead. I was like, man, that would be a dream to fly one of those things. And my old lad was like, why don't you? And I was like, oh, I mean, you know, it's a helicopter. I mean, who the hell knows? I don't know why I don't fly helicopter or why I even can. Like, I wear glasses. I'm like, I don't know the faintest thing about it. So I kind of started to look into a little bit and called a couple of places. Like, look, I wear glasses. My sight's not, you know, it's correctable to 20/20. And they were like, that's all you need. It's like, all right, cool. So I went up to do a medical in Dublin and started taking flight lessons. And then, you know, you kind of work through that and you still really don't know where you're going with it. There's a lot to learn in aviation. I had no aviation in my family at all. Like, I didn't have any people to talk to about it. I didn't know any pilots. I didn't know anything. So the guys up at the flight school in Ireland were pretty cool. And one of them mentioned something to me. He's like, you should just go to the States. The States, there's so much opportunity over there. And the flight training's insane. Like, the weather's super good. Like, Ireland, you know, it's green country, it's beautiful, we get a lot of rain, kind of hurts your flight train a little bit. But so I was like, that's a pretty big step. So kind of started looking into it. And at the time, it was like, with the currency rates and everything, it was a lot cheaper actually to go to the States. So I was like, wow. So I did my private license in Ireland, and then I hopped on a plane on this, I think it was the 7th of January 2007. And my folks came over with me, you know, just came over for a little. Well, they're, you know, it's down to I started in Florida. So they're like, we'll come over to Florida for a week or two and hang out. It's no big deal. And I was like, oh, yeah. All right, cool. And so, yeah, man. And then from there on, it was just like I got into this. So I came over initially to do my European pilot's license. And I was I was over on a 2-year visa, and then I was going to go back to Europe and fly in Europe. You know, that was my plan. What I was going to do, I didn't really know, but I would go back with a commercial license and then have to, you know, figure it out from there. So,
yeah.
Basically, then I kind of got into the scene over here. The European license was 47-week course. It was 845 hours of ground school. So it was very involved, and I was never an academic person. I'm a lot more of a hands-on person. I sucked at school. I hated school. So my folks were like, that's a lot of ground school. It's like, well, I'll be fine. So I was always excelled at things I enjoy. Like, if I enjoy it and I'm actually interested in it, I should be fine. You know? So, I got through that and I did really well. And, I ended up meeting a girl over here in October of 2007. And then that changed my perspective a little bit. And I kind of kept the flying going. And it was just before 2008, which we all know that was a major crash in the economy. And it was extremely hard to get jobs. But I met this girl, and we we're still married today. We have a kid together. So it's great. And she's kind of stuck by me the whole time. It's a wild career, because, you know, everyone talks about aviation and how it's hard on relationships, and it is, no doubt. But you're away a lot, you're doing a lot of stuff on the road, but it's worked out really good, and, you know, we have a good life. And, you know, once I kind of figured out where I wanted to go, you just kind of push yourself to get there. You know, there was an IMAX video that showed these guys working on power lines. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, that's
what I want.
That's me right there. Yeah. So,
That's pretty cool, man. How many pilots are there? There's probably not a lot of pilots, eh? Like in the grand scheme of things.
Doing power line, you mean, or?
Yeah. Power line pilots.
I think there's more now than there probably was 10 years ago, just because the field has expanded and everything. I'd say there might be a couple hundred in the country, and I would say half of that are worth their weight. I would say though, realistically, there's probably about a couple hundred pilots in the country doing power line, of some form of power line. The powerline construction world is definitely smaller than, you know, if you take away the kind of patrol and inspection work, But the construction world is definitely, it's a very prideful job too. It's one of those jobs where if you're a kind of fully fledged construction pilot, it's, you can take a lot of pride in what you do. You know, it's just really, really, it's fun work, but it's very technical work. And I find it's kind of one of those jobs in this industry that it's, to me, it's kind of towards the pinnacle of helicopter work. You know, it's very precise. There's a lot of industry knowledge involved in it. And I think when you get to become a fully fledged like powerline construction pilot, it's you can take a lot of pride in that. So.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. And it's hard on relationships, right? I work in an industry that's very much the same, oil and gas, right? Very hard on relationships. When things are booming, man, you go, right? And when it's not, you're sitting around and you're at home and you're annoying the shit out of your wife, yeah. Your significant other. And yeah, man, there's a lot of downtime. Yeah, like when it comes to that, but like, you know, when things are booming, you're never home, right? Like I've spent up to 6 months away at a time, right?
Yeah.
And home for maybe a week, and then, you know, but mainly, and that's why I switched jobs, because like for the longest time, you know, 5 weeks on, you know, five to six weeks on, and to get a week off. But like when you're on, right, you're on call 24/7, and
right.
You know, not anymore, but like I was on call 24/7, and you know, I couldn't talk to my wife as much as I wanted to, right? You know, like, you know, especially back in the day, we used to live across the country, and I'd work out here, and she was 2 hours ahead, so you know, and taking care of two babies, and so she was sleeping when they were sleeping, and you know, so I'd be like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'd be at work, and then she'd be asleep there, and then I'd get off work and I'd go to sleep, and then she'd wake up, and it was like that for like 2 years, right? And
it was
hard. That was very hard.
Yeah, and I think like hats off to for you guys, because I think, you know, typically my schedule has been more 3 weeks on, 3 weeks off, and it's not always consistent. There's times where you just have to stay out, and that's fine, but it's you know, I think over time throughout my career, you know, the money is pretty good flying power lines, but to me, schedule and time off has always been worth more than money, you know, to be able to kind of create a life outside, because you almost have like two lives. You have your work life, and some of my best friends are my colleagues and guys I work with every day.
Yeah.
And then you have your home time, and I have really good friends and best friends on that side of things, and those guys never meet each other because I go to the other side of the country to do this work. But it's like, yeah, it's almost like you kind of lead a double life, but it's like you have to find that balance, you know what I mean? It's like you have to find it, and it can be hard, like especially with a young child at home or young kids at home, to come back from that man camp sort of life. And like, you know, you're on the road. You can drink beers every day with the boys. You can do whatever you want on the road. But then you got to come back and you have to fit right in back to family life and be dad, be a husband. Yep. And it's like it's an adjustment. Like it's tough. Like, but it's it's one of those things you kind of figure it out as you go. You know.
Yep. For me, I got three at home, right? So I got a wife and two kids at home. So it's just me. When I come home, I can't expect them to mold themselves around me. I got to assimilate back in and mold myself around them, right?
You have to.
And I have to fit in with their schedule. And that can be tough. That's overwhelming sometimes, right?
Yep.
It's like I go from, and my wife is just cluing into this now. I go from, you know, yeah, sure, I might have some downtime, but it's not really downtime. I'm not in my own bed. I'm not watching my own. I'm not in the comfort of my own home, right? Right. And I'm sitting there relaxing, but I'm on edge because I'm waiting for the phone to call, for the phone to ring, right? I'm waiting for that phone call saying, hey, let's go, we're going, right? And, you know, sure, yeah, I'm back in my room at night for 2 hours before bed. And then I got to, like, you know, that's all I can do, right? So she's just catching on to this now that, like, yeah, I might have downtime, but it's not relaxing. So when I come home, and it's taken a long time to get to this, when I come home, I'm coming home to, yeah, spend time with them, and I'm willing to assimilate back in, but I need that day. I need at least a day to, like,
yeah,
lay in my bed. And, like,
and it's hard to, it's hard to explain that you need a day when you come home. They're like, what do you mean? You're not excited to be home? It's like, of course I'm excited to be home, but it's like, it's just, it's an adjust, an adjustment period. You know what I mean? And yeah, it's kind of like,
yeah,
you're kind of coming, yeah, down off that whole, like, on the job thing to just trying to relax. And it's, yeah, I think I've gotten pretty good at it now where I can adjust pretty quickly, but yeah, early on, especially with a young kid, it's like my daughter's still young. She's 9. She'll be 10 in November, but it's just an interesting adjustment. And sometimes it doesn't go as smooth as you want. Like, you just, you know, you kind of come back into an environment where there's a lot of stuff going on at home and you're just like, where the fuck am I trying to fit in here? And, you know, you, like, you get in a little argument or something with the wife and you're like, okay, hey, okay, everything's cool. Like, I'm just trying to see where, yeah, I'm fit into all the stuff you guys have going on at home, because they're not, I don't ever expect them to change for me. I have to fit into their life because I'm, yeah, back in the door here. And for them, it's like, hey, it's super exciting. Dad's home. And that's the coolest thing ever. But, you know, you have to just have that kind of moment of adjustment where you're just like, okay, I'm home. I'm in home mode. I'm in dad mode. And it's just like,
yeah,
I'm home now. So, yeah.
And you talk to a lot of guys, right, that, like, have a hard time making that adjustment, right? And, like, for the longest time, like, I kept it in the back of my mind that, like, I'm one of those guys, right? Like, I feel bad. I come home and it's like, am I a bad parent? Am I a bad husband? Am I bad? You know, like, am I, you know, because, like, I'm having a hard time adjusting. There's almost a period of time. And we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago. So it's like, it's almost like a thing where, like, shit, should I even go home? Right? Yeah. Because, like, you know, like, that's your home, but, like, the lifestyle takes a lot out of you, right? The lifestyle kind of messes you up a little bit, and you really got to, like, know how to walk that. It's a tightrope. You got to learn how to walk it, right? And it's a game. It's, yeah, a game for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, you know, even, like, you kind of go from, I think, you know, our sort of environments is, there's a lot of booze and there's a lot of, you know, everyone comes back to the hotel. And, you know, we stay in hotels more than kind of the man camps a lot. So everyone comes back to the hotel and get together and you go for a couple of beers in the evening just to kind of unwind from the day you had. And then, or sometimes, you know, we'll hang out in the park lot and we'll grill out and cook steaks and stuff in the park lot and drink beers and hang out. And then you kind of come home and you're like, oh, and then this is maybe for me, maybe it's an Irish thing, but you kind of, you know, I'm just like, hey, we should go out for dinner. Let's go out, you know, and let's go do something. And, oh, well, we can't. Well, it's, you know, it's a school. All of a sudden, I know it's a school night, but I'm, oh, shit. Yeah, it's a school night. So we can't just go do that. But, and I love to, you know, we try to go out as often as we can and go for, you know, when I'm home, and especially early on when I'm home. And, you know, the wife loves you for the first week and it's great and we all have fun and we go out for dinner and stuff. And then I'm lucky enough to have, like, my father-in-law lives nearby. I have a sister-in-law nearby. So they're like, oh, Damo's home. So we'll go, you know, hey, if you guys need anybody to come down and watch Finley and you guys go out. And it's like, yeah, cool. But you kind of, that, it's not really a party mode, obviously, because you're working, but it's like, you just get into that, like, you're going to restaurants because you get per diem. You're going out every night to eat food. I don't want to cook here. I'm just going to go out to a restaurant. And then sometimes you come home and she's, you know, the family's like, hey, let's go out to eat. And I'm like, I would just fucking kill for a home-cooked dinner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we, yeah, just sit in? Like, I don't care. I'll get steaks and grill at the house. But, like, you know, and they haven't eaten out and since you've left. Like, they've just been, you know, which is – yeah, so it's just, there's a whole adjustment thing, and it's just a balance, man, and it's fun. It's kind of fun juggling all around, but it's like, yeah, you just got to find that balance and keep life kind of fun with the family all the time, obviously.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, I like things to be fun and easy personally. You know, I like things easy on the road. I like things easy at home. So, yeah, you just got to figure it out.
Yeah, that keeping things easy, right? Like, it's easier said than done, right? Like, yeah. It's like, you know what, like, I'm going to do this to make it easy, this to make it easy, this to make it easy. And then, like, you know, a wrench gets thrown in one of your plans and it fucks everything up. And you're just like, all right, well, now I got to roll with this, right? It's very exactly. much being able to, like, you know, just go with it, right? Like,
right, right.
And I'm like that. I just go with it. You know, like, oh, I have this plan, right? Well, this plan fits in with my next four plans. And then, like, you know, it's like, well, fuck, this plan gets fucked up. All those plans get fucked up. And I'm just whatever. I guess I'll just take it as it comes then, right? You know, and, like, that's what I do, man. And I'm so good at that. And I was talking to my wife about this the other day. She's like, well, this, that, and the next thing. And I'm like, oh, I've already thought of that, right? Like, don't worry. Like, my job, our jobs, right, has taught us, like, shit's going to go wrong somewhere along the line. And we got to be able to fix it on the fly. And we got to be thinking, like, okay, I can start to see it going wrong. Well, it's going to really shit the bed three steps from now. And I have to be able to fix it right fucking now.
Exactly.
Right? And and I've told her that, you know, like, I reply that to that at home too. Right. And it's like, hey, you know, like, we're having this issue right now. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'm working on fixing it. I've been fixing it since back there, but you haven't seen it. Right. And she, I have a hard time with that, right? Because, like, there's no pre-planning. There's no thinking ahead. There's no, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, man, like, I've been training for this my entire life, right?
Exactly. I know, and exactly. Like, it's like, you know, we are constantly in our line of work, especially flying helicopters, you're kind of looking, you're always looking ahead to the next problem or the next potential issue. So you're kind of like, you're in that world, and it's like, but, you know, as much and all as it applies in the work life and in the job, sometimes it doesn't apply as well in the family life, even though you can see it, and you kind of, you just have to, you know, you just treat things a little differently, I guess.
Sometimes I just let it explode when I'm at home, you know, like, it's like,
I mean, hey, we all do. And then you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, I feel bad about that. I just kind of flipped out for no reason. But it's like, you know, sometimes it's easy to flip out with a bunch of linemen. But when you flip out with the wife and she looks at you like, I am sorry, I fucked up pretty bad there.
you know what? It's funny. Because you can yell and scream at linemen whose arms are like this fucking big. Right. Yeah. And you're like,
yeah,
you know what? You yell at the wife who's like this fucking big, and she's more scary than they are.
Oh, right? hands down. Yeah, it's like, and it's funny because when you have a little bit of advantage, even though pilots aren't always the biggest boys, the linemen are the biggest boys in the job for sure. But it's we can get away with a lot of shit, you know, giving a lot of shit to a lineman when you're the pilot, because they're like, he is the pilot. So at the end of the day, you know, when I'm hanging on the rope underneath the helicopter, he's got the control. And I've had some funny times with these guys, man. They're just some of my best friends in life, with these linemen, dude. And when you're working in such close kind of proximity, and, you know, essentially, I guess, life or death stuff, where things can go wrong. If things can go wrong, they'll go wrong really, really fast. And if things go wrong, it's usually not a good outcome for one or the other. But it's you develop such close relationships where you guys are just giving each other shit constantly. And it's great. I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it. Like, that's the whole, you know, and I think the more shit you're able to give somebody, probably the closer you are with them. And it's great. So.
Yeah, man. I know exactly what you mean by that. You know, like, so I just started here. Today was day two. Tomorrow's day three, right? And the guy that I'm working with, who's training me right now, he knows me from TikTok, right? Like, he followed me there already, and he's just like, he's all excited, you know, he's working with me and stuff like that. But, like, he's like, you know, man, he's like, you're actually pretty cool, man. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm just a normal Joe. Yeah, man. And we're just hanging out and shit, and we're going on day three, and we're already making gay jokes with each other all day long, you know.
Yeah, like, hey, all, man, the gay jokes.
Come sit on my lap, bro. I'm like, fuck yeah, today we made a video together. And yeah, and like, I'm like, hey, you want to make a video?
You make a gay, did you guys make a gay video together, or was it normal?
No, no, not yet. That's tomorrow. That's
day three. Nice.
Yeah, day three.
Yeah.
So
I've had a bunch of linemen ask me to make gay videos, but I haven't got there yet myself. So
so we actually made a Morning Dookie. So I started a new segment on my podcast called The Morning Dookie.
All right,
it started in a video I made last week, and I made a part of the video that said I was just sitting there taking my morning dookie, right? And so I started a new segment. It's gonna be a daily segment on the podcast. It's gonna be like 10-15 minutes long, just shooting the shit about, you know, the upcoming day and the day prior and what's happening on the podcast, you know, for the next week. And if the podcast drops that day or the day before, we'll talk about it a little bit. And so we did that, and he was more than pumped to be a part of it. He's like, yeah, man, thanks for having me. This is awesome, dude. You know, like,
yeah,
I'm like, fuck yeah, man. Like, yeah, I'm sitting there chilling. I want to do it, and I don't want to do it and not include the person next to me. You know, I don't want to be that guy. I wanted to make it. If you're sitting there like, hey, man, be quiet for a minute. Like,
Yeah, man.
We're going to do it together. It ended up being 12 minutes long. And nice. I think it's going to be like, you know, if it doesn't last, it doesn't last. But like, you know, it had like 40 downloads on it in like the first like 3 or 4 hours. So, what I mean?
You're doing really well with the podcast, man. It's pretty sweet. Like,
dude, I'm having a lot of fun, man. I think this will be, where are we at now? This will be like 96, 97, 96.
That's insane, dude. Like, that's really, really, that's insane.
Yeah, we're like 4 weeks away from episode 100, man. I'm pumped.
Well, so what episode is this? This is...
This will be like 90,
95, 96? No, that's all right. 95, 96, good. I mean, I could have come up with a centenary one, but, you know, I'll take 95 or 96. It's cool to, like, kind of change things up and, like, add in little snippets of this and that. Like you said, that the Morning Dookie thing, that's fun, man. It's like... You know, you gotta kind of keep it fresh as well. Do you meet a lot of people on, like, when you go out to new job sites that recognize you from social media?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. It's a lot of fun. It's so I noticed when I got off the plane the other day, because it's fly in, fly out, and I noticed when I got the plane the other day, one of the guys was like looking at me, right? And he wasn't saying anything, he was just staring at me. I'm like, yeah, just say hi already, man. Like, I don't, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then I got later on that said, I'm pretty sure I saw you getting off the plane earlier. I'm like, yeah, man, you did. What's up? How's it going? I'm in the kitchen this morning bagging my lunch, and buddy comes up. He's like, man, he's like, I knew I'd see you around here at some point in time, whatever. And he shook my hand. I'm like, yeah, man, hey, how's it going, buddy? You know, like, it's I know a lot of guys, and I've heard of a lot of guys, you know, they make the videos and they get the followers and stuff like that. And they don't like to interact with people when they come up to them, right? And they get all bitchy about it. And I'm like, man, no point in being that way. You know, I'm putting myself out there.
Yeah.
You guys are the whole reason why my podcast does how it does and how my videos how it does. So, you know, like, of course I'm going to interact and say hi, man. You know? Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
100%, man. It's kind of like one of those things. It's like, you know, social media for me is kind of like, I have some cool videos on there. I'm not like, I wouldn't call myself a content creator, really. I mean, I like to document some of the stuff we do, but then like I'll fall off the map for a while and then I'll come back and I'll do a cool video. And sometimes it's really hard, like in this line of work, like with the helicopter and the pilot, you got to set a lot of shit up to get some good footage. And then it's like, you know, I think a lot of our work, we just kind of hop in and go, and then we're done. I'm like, oh shit, I should have put a camera in. That would have been cool. But then I don't even think about it because there's a lot of other stuff going on. But there's a lot of guys, you know, that I'm seeing with, you know, like yourself and a lot of the guys that with Trollco that are kind of making awesome videos, and it's like, oh yeah, I could have done that something that way. And I'm trying to get more into that mode of, like, you know, I think the more you have videos of yourself at work doing stuff, people are going to get, you know, they get interested in it, and then maybe you can people who are interested in that kind of line of work are going to be like, oh shit, like this is amazing. But anytime anybody reaches out to me or asks me questions, I always try to make time for it and just be like, how did you get to where you're at? And it's like, okay, this was kind of my path. A lot of people think, you know, a lot of guys do military are doing the power line work. They're like, oh, you know, I watch videos on social media. It's like, oh, these guys must have been like special forces pilots and shit like that. And it's like, nah, dude, we're most of us doing this stuff are civilian trained. We weren't military. I was in the Irish Army for a little bit, but I wasn't a pilot. But it's most of us are just civilian trained, and they're just guys who wanted to do this work, you know? So it's definitely an option for people who are not down the military route, but really have an interest in flying. It's achievable. It's very, very achievable, you know, and it's pretty wild work. And it's, you know, as I said, I think it's kind of towards the pinnacle of helicopter flying, to be honest with you. It's super precise and it's super satisfying. You can kind of finish at the end of a day and be like, man, we just built all that shit. Look at that. So that's what's pretty cool about it. So
that's badass, man. I, like I said, you know, I've looked up and I've watched, you know, I've never interacted with one before, but I have watched and I've seen them. And, you know, like the other ones that I see too are the crane ones, right? You got the guy flying and you got the guy operating the crane in the back. And I'm like, man, whether it's you guys or the crane one, man, that's going to be an insane amount of communication. And
trust. Oh, insane, dude. Any of that external load kind of work where there's loads hanging underneath the helicopters, it's definitely a lot of communication, a lot of just precision, a lot of training. And, you know, even if it's a guy hanging under the helicopter, you know, he's doing head signals to me or he's talking to me on the radio or some. We use the Sina headsets from the motorcycle headsets where you can talk to each other via Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So a lot of time we'll use that stuff, but it's just kind of like, it's just you guys, you get synchronized with guys, you know what I mean? And you kind of, I know how all these linemen work. We all kind of so used to working with each other that most of the time we know where they want to go. They know we know where they want to go and we just kind of do it. And it's just like, okay, great. And once you kind of reach that level with guys, it's super nice. You know, when you're not kind of, when the communication just becomes so fluid that it just works out. It's awesome. Yeah.
Sync up like you're at home and you're yeah. Period, and you're like syncing up to match hers, and you're grumpy too, right? Like you guys right. sync up right. and match energy. That's
yeah. hot. But it is, dude. It's great. Like, and it's a great feeling when you kind of reach that level of camaraderie with guys as well, where it's like you have a group of guys that you're with each other all day. You get back to the hotel, and you all want to go drink a beer together in the parking lot and cook steaks in the back of the truck. It's like that's as good as it gets. That oh, is yeah, man. As it gets because. If you have that level of camaraderie and everyone can hang out together, I mean, that's as good as it gets right there. So,
hell yeah, man. I work on a road crew in the summertime and it's like that very much, you know, like we work all day together, like 13, 14 hours. We'll be, you know, on the road doing our thing. We'll get back to the hotel and then be like, steaks, barbecue, yeah. out back. You know, yeah. I get the beer, right? It's like, you don't right. even think twice. You're like, right. yeah. And that's where the wife gets upset a little bit. Well, you could hang out with your buddies and I'm stuck here with the kids. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. right. Like half of these guys, we don't even talk to each other outside of the, you know, the season. When the yeah. season ends, we don't talk. And when we're home, we don't talk. You might think we're hanging out because we're buddies, but like, it's a lonely life, right? It's a lonely life. We all go back to our room. We all yeah. stare at the walls and look at our phones, right? And like, you know, so we're sharing a drink, and I say this a lot, we're sharing a drink called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone, right?
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah man. And it's just like, just for mental health in general, like if you're like, I'm super social, like I love to socialize. I mean, it's not even about, it's not even about the beers or the drink. And it's like, I just like to be around people and like-minded people, and that kind of keeps yeah. me sane. And especially like when I'm on the road, like, you know, I think a lot of us, we get that, and I'm like, if everyone's like, oh yeah where everyone's tired and everything's like, hey, you know what, let's go for a quick beer next door, let's just go for a bite to eat and then we'll come back and go to bed, whatever. But it's just like, I think just that socialness for me like keeps me kind of focused and keeps me sane, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. man. Yeah, same. And then, you know, the podcast, you know, you were saying earlier how, you know, not a lot of people see this kind of work happening, right? And you get some people reach out to you, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's been the insane thing about social media and the blue collar side of social media, right? We've talked about it quite a bit too, is that, you know, when people want to see, you know, a career, they want to kind of look at, you know, they want to get an idea for what they want to do, right? They have the option to find guys like us and be like, all right, how do these guys operate? What do they do? Right.
Yeah.
Before, like we were talking about it today at work too. And it was like, yeah, man, like, you know, I want to work in the oil and gas industry. Well, I have no idea what they do. And it seems scary. You hear, oh, big rig and fucking people die. No, thanks. I'll back away from that and I'll go away. And that's right. Created a bit of a, you know, labor shortage, right? And yep. That and many other things. But so now, what you can do, you can go on and you can type in, you know, like Dick Frost, right? Or you know, Lane Borley or whatever. And you can see what they do. And Lane Borley is fantastic for it because he actually works on a rig and he is paid by his company to show what each level of the rig does.
Yeah, that's pretty
sweet. How much they make and what they're going to be doing, right? He's good people, man. And, you know, there's guys like you showing the helicopter side of things. Then you got, you know, Slim Brick and Larry Rough Iron. And, you know, you got all those guys. They're showing what they do in their
perspective. Yeah, and they do such a great job. Like, no more than yourself. They do such a good job of showing that, like, you know, they're very consistent with their content. You're very consistent with your content. And your content's hilarious because you kind of do a lot of comedy style stuff.
Yeah.
Shows your day today and it's great. Some guys do more technical videos where you get to see their kind of gist of their jobs every day. And yeah, I think it's really important because it's like, and kind of my sort of stuff, and especially on my end, the pilot end, kind of falls in kind of a gray area because it wouldn't be considered a trade, but we purely work power lines doing what I do. So it's like, it kind of falls into that operator area. I don't know. But anyway, it's kind of, but I really enjoy watching a lot of the guys' videos and I'm like, man, there's so much knowledge out there that they're just showing people, especially Slim Brick, who's just, well, he's been trying to prove a lot lately how he can lift two bricks. And I believed him on the first video, but apparently people are believing him on that one. But some of the guys are super cool, man. And they put a lot of effort into their content. And it kind of makes me want to push it up a little bit more and just, and you know, do more to show people how it is. And you know, it's, this side of the industry, for what I do, I think a lot of people ask me, oh my, how did you do this? Because it's like, yeah, you're flying a helicopter, and it seems probably unachievable to a lot of people, but it's quite achievable. You know, it's, you know, you can spend money going to college or you can spend money training to be a pilot and then eventually get into utility, which is the kind of blue collar side of helicopter flying. So it's there. I mean, you just kind of got to want it. You really have to want it. It's like anything. If you want to get to the top level of wherever you're at, you just have to want it and just.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Climb that ladder, bud.
Climb the ladder, man. Climb the ladder.
Yeah, man. And then, you know, kind of what I'm doing with the podcast, right, is like, everyone's kind of doing their own content for their own trade. And me, like, you know, it started off oil field, but like, you know, how much rigs and pipelines and shit can you talk about before it gets redundant?
Yeah.
So then I did a pivot and I was like, well, let's talk to everybody.
Everybody. Yeah.
Right. You've been interested. Let's get them on there, you know, make it a blue collar podcast and we'll, you know, we'll learn about power line pilots and we'll learn about, you know, carpentry and we'll learn about bricklayers and we'll learn about oil and gas and
heavy
equipment. And yeah, man. And, you know, I love where it's gone. You know what I mean? Like we're having
definitely, and it all kind of ties in together too. Like it's like, because even though, like I've worked with guys where HVAC guys and guys on thing where we're dropping in air conditioners with the helicopter, and all of a sudden now we're talking to each other, or you know, we're dropping in loads of material and concrete for guys to build avalanche, you know, protection stuff up in like Utah, like we did in Alta a couple of years back. And like these are all construction guys and they're concrete guys and they're building bases up in the mountains, but all of a sudden now we have to be able to communicate from the helicopter, and we're flying them in. And it's like, so it's super cool how you can kind of intertwine all these industries together. And it's like, and everybody's like-minded, like we're all doing the same thing. Everybody's like there for the same common goal of like, this is what we're put here to do. This is the job we have. So let's just fucking get after it. You know what I mean? It's like,
hell yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
I love that, man. Hey, I got a question. Do you know what viscosity is?
Viscosity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. In your own words, what's viscosity?
Viscosity would be, in my own words, I guess how thick a liquid might be.
Hell yeah, man. How thick a load is, right?
Like, yeah.
And there's a reason, you know, there's a method to the madness here. The podcast is sponsored by the Mudman, and the Mudman deals in viscosity on the rigs, right? Like how thick the load is going downhole. If it's too viscous, he makes it less viscous. If it's
needs
to be more viscous, then he'll make it more viscous, you know?
Interesting. And, yeah.
Yeah, so the Mudman, he's sponsored the podcast for over a year now, and, you know, he had the mic and the headset when I needed it the most. And the man, he bought me this laptop. So now I don't really need the mic and the headset as much, because the mic on the laptop is good. It's a brand new MacBook Pro that we're recording on now. And shout out to the Mudman for all your drilling fluid and laboratory testing equipment needs. www.mudmarket.com.
Dude, that's cool, man. And like the way that you found people to help you with that and to like sponsor you like that, it says a lot about you as well, man, because you know, if you're obviously worth it.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, you know,
do a great job, man. It's fun listening to you, and I love your sketches on online and everything. It's like, yeah, you're one of the best dicks I know.
Thanks, man. You know, I'm one of the smallest ones too. Like, I'm five foot four. You know, so a lot of people are like, oh, I expected to be bigger. My wife says the same thing, bro. You know, like,
yeah. Nice. Yeah, yeah. We were up in, speaking of viscosity, we were up in, when I told you that job we did building the avalanche stuff up in Alta back in Utah a few years back, man, that was probably one of the coolest jobs I've ever done. It was like dropping dudes off on the side of the mountains up there. It was just like, flying the mountains is something different. It's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. And then when I kind of watch videos now, seeing all the stuff that, you know, they can literally, instead of shooting a howitzer across a mountain to hit the valley on the side, which is pretty cool in itself, but they can just like drop all these avalanche bombs from these units that, like, you know, all remote control. So it's pretty sweet. But yeah, it's like there's a lot of satisfaction when you kind of leave jobs and you see kind of what you've done, and then you see it in use, you know, and it's like you see things rolling or you see things built or whatever. It's like, yeah, it's, I think that's a lot of it. Why a lot of us do it is you can kind of look back and be like, I had a little part of building that. That's kind of sweet. So.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah. So where I am right now, the mine I'm at right now in Fort McMurray, Alberta, I was here last 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
When they were building this place.
Wow. Right?
I put all the pilings in for the power lines and just the camp, everything, right? Yeah. And the camp we stayed at was on site. It was the nicest camp I've ever stayed at. And now it's closed down because they built it in the blast zone. They use it as like storage facility now. And I see it all the time. I'm like, fuck, I love that place, right? and then the camp they built to replace that one, I pass it on my way in every morning and I'm just like, that looks pretty nice, but we're staying down the highway a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this camp, I'd never stayed at this camp before, but I remember you go back further than the 10 years. You go like 13 years ago, when I first started in the oil patch, I was working at Husky Sunrise, now it's Synovus, which I helped build that plant, right? Like that plant is fully operational and all that shit now, and it's fucking wild, right? And so... I stayed at that camp. I remember the day I got fired from that job. I was just a young lad, right? And what I did was I put in my vacation request, right? And I'm like, I'm going like 3 months prior. And my boss and I, we didn't really get along. He didn't like me. right? And so I put it in, and he's like, yeah, I'll hand this in. It was a union job. And he's like, I'll put it in, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, cool. And like 3 weeks before, I'm like, hey, man, we're good to go? He's like, yeah, you're good, man. We're good. Okay, cool. I was dumping money into this trip forever, 10 grand by this point in this trip. And so it was like a week before, and I'm like, hey, we're good, right? And he's like, oh, I don't think I handed that in, man. He's like, we better go talk to HR. So I went to talk to HR, and they're like, no, you can't leave. There's a vacation freeze for this period of time right now. I'm like, okay, well, I handed this in 3 months ago.
Yeah, right? This is fucking happening.
And I've been dumping money into this. I was going to Disney World. So, you know, I was like, I'm fucking going to see Mickey Mouse. You know what I mean? Like,
fucking right.
Right. So I'm like, no. And I'm like, oh, I'll pay for my own room. It's only 3 days. I wanted to leave 3 days early is what I wanted. Right. And I'm like, I'll pay the 3 days for my room. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. And I'm like, okay. So I was supposed to leave on Wednesday to go home, fly out. And I wanted to leave on Monday. Right. So instead, a couple days had passed, and on Sunday, I rush in, and I'm like, my wife's just been in a car accident. I need to go home, right? And, like, I pulled a picture up because a friend of mine on Facebook had just gotten into a car accident. She was wearing a neck brace, and I'm like, look, right? So they're like, okay, and they didn't believe me, but they're like, okay, we'll send you home, but you got to pay for your own way home. I'm like, I don't care
how. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to Disney World, bitches.
So I go home. I go to Disney World. I spend the week at Disney World. I posted pictures of Disney World all over the fucking Facebook. Right? I only had one guy from work on my Facebook, and he happened to be my boss's buddy. Right? And
I was like, that's all you need. Son of a bitch.
They called me in and they're like, "So you went to Facebook on your day or Disney World on your days off, eh?" And I'm like, yeah, my wife was really sore from the car accident, really down and depressed. So I fucking said, hey, let's go to Disney World, right?
And she needed a little talk to Mickey Mouse.
Right? I'd only been talking about going to Disney World for 3 months. So, like, you know. And so the issue was, the superintendent, he called me and he's like, hey, man, like, so word got out that you went to Disney World and this is what happened. He's like, we got to do an investigation. You got to go back to camp and you're going to have, you know, suspension with pay for a couple days. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Fuck. With pay. Oh, fuck. All right.
All right.
So fucking, I went back to camp. I sat there. My supervisor calls me up. He's like, hey, man. He's like, can you show proof that your wife was in a car accident? And I showed the picture. He's like, man, we all know that's not your wife. And we all know
you need proof.
You drive. Right? We need proof. And I'm like, man, you know damn well I don't have proof. You know damn well where I went. Right? And he's like, all right, man. And then I got called into the office and he's like, man, you're a big shit. Like, you're probably going home. Like, this is. You know, I'm like, I packed my bags last night, bro. I already know this, right?
Yeah, whatever. Fuck so, it.
Yeah.
I might even go back to Disney World.
So he said to me, he's like, where you went wrong is, he's like, you gave details about what was going on. He's like, had you come in and said, hey, there's a family emergency, I got to go. We're not allowed to question it. There's a family emergency, I got to go. You said car accident. Your wife
you gave him all the ammo, basically. Gotcha.
I gave him the ammo and I handed them the gun. I'm like, yeah. And I pointed at myself, like, I might as well pull the trigger. So, yeah, man, I call that the $110,000 Disney trip, right? Like, it was an expensive fucking, right? But
the
thing was, that was November. I got fired in November. By March, that whole company got skidded from sight. They were all gone. So they were all looking for jobs by March, and I already had like a 5 month head start to look for a new job.
Yeah.
So, you know, and whatever, I ended up here, right? And it was cool. It was all good, man. But yeah, it was pretty wild. Back to when I got fired, they drove me into town and we stopped at this camp for dinner. They're like, you know, we're going to pull into camp and have a little dinner. I'm like, oh, sounds good to me, bro. I'm getting fired. I can't afford a meal anyway. So,
yeah.
So I came here and had dinner and, you know, it was now I'm staying here. So yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's everything works out for a reason. It's like, even, you know, you get fired from a job and you just kind of like, and even if it's for some stupid shit, people like lose their minds. Like, oh, I got fired. It's like, fucking whatever. Get after it. Find somewhere else. Go work somewhere
else. Find somewhere else, man. There's
places to work. And even if it's like, I was wrongfully fired and I was this, it's like, just fucking, who cares? You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I get it. Like, you want to make sure people see that you didn't do anything wrong or, you know, that you don't deserve this. But at the end of the day, sometimes companies do stupid shit for some, whatever reason they do. You just got to go just, and sometimes it's a blessing in disguise too. So it's kind of like,
absolutely. And it was,
and it is. And it honestly, was. It usually is a blessing in disguise. You're like, before you know it, you're going to be doing something. You're like, oh God, I'm so glad to be away from that last place. So, yeah, most people have been there at some stage or another, you know.
Yep, I spent the last 10 years on the other side of the province, right, where it's the Wild Wild West, it's very cowboy, you know, and there's not as much safety. They're still pretty hard on the safety.
Yeah,
but you know, the hours are long and crazy, and it's like, you know, doing some cowboy shit up here. No cowboy shit, you know.
Okay.
It's gravy, but you gotta follow up. Ton of rules, right? And it's interesting, man. A third of Canada's oil comes out of here every day.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think the safety thing is massive, like across the industry and probably every section of the industry, every part of every industry right now. It's like, I don't know, you can almost safety yourself out of safety. You know what I mean? Like, it's a serious thing, but it's like, sometimes it just goes too far and you kind of just be like, hey, you know, it'd be actually safer if we didn't do that. But
yeah,
it's hard to argue. You just kind of got to go with the flow, and that's fine. That's kind of just the trend of the industry. But so where you're at right now, you said, which part of Canada are you in?
I'm in Alberta.
You're in Alberta. Okay. I was in Alberta once back in 2007. I had a friend from Ireland move up there. And she lived in, I flew into Calgary, and she lives in, it wasn't far from Banff.
Canmore.
Dude, it was so cool up there. I've been in Nova Scotia like a couple of years back, but I got to get back up that way this year because I loved Canada, man. It was
hell yeah, man. I'm in Edmonton. I'm 3 hours north of her. And,
okay.
And I'm I'm about the same distance from Banff and Jasper where I'm at. But like, I'm, I lived in Calgary for 2 years. I lived in the deep southeast. It was, it was a pretty nice place. It was expensive. Yeah. I definitely lived beyond my means, you know, like this is fucking fancy, you know, like shit.
Is living costs pretty expensive up in Canada at the moment, or?
Oh yeah. Taxes are crazy. The cost of everything is just nuts. You pay fuel, the equivalent of what we are paying in gallons, I guess, would be almost $8 a gallon.
So it's probably pretty similar to Ireland then. It's about everything's charged in liters and all that stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. And
Massachusetts is a fairly expensive, New England, some states, but Massachusetts is fairly expensive taxes and shit. Like they seem to want to, all these places want to charge you to, you know, if you
come to Canada, man, we got tax on tax.
This is like, and now you got to pay it to keep your own property that you worked hard to pay for. On your own property, it's like Jesus Christ. Like,
you're paying like, I think we're just paying over 40% tax right now, maybe more.
Really? Oh wow! Oh,
Canada's crazy, man. Canada's nuts.
Yeah, that's a lot, man. That's a lot.
So, question for you: like, as a pilot, you can tell me you get fucked if you want to. I was gonna ask, for people starting out in that industry and want to go forward, like, what's the starting wage or salary, I guess, to be a pilot?
Yeah, the helicopter world is interesting because it's kind of, it would be known for lower pay than the airline kind of fixed wing world. So I would always say, for people who want to kind of start out and they have an interest in helicopters, the first thing you kind of want to do is you want to go do your physical, your medical, and just make sure that you don't have any issues that's kind of like going to stop you from getting a pilot's license and being able to work commercially. after that, then you kind of got to assess, like, you know, how much is it going to cost for your training? And to become a commercial pilot, a lot of people start out as a flight instructor over down in the States. Canada is different. Flight instructor is more of a late in the career thing. So, like, they're two very different industries, the US and Canada. But down in the US, typically people will kind of do a flight instructor. And it's a fairly low-paying job. Like, it's funny because you're teaching people how to fly aircraft and they're paying you, like, you know, $20 an hour, $15 an hour, maybe. Like, it's kind of
shit.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty crazy. Like, it's the flight instructor side of things in the States is pretty low paying. Some schools may pay a little better, but you have
for to $20 an hour. I'm teaching them how to crash that bitch. You know,
$20 an hour. You fuck, go flip some fucking burgers. You know, it'll be a lot cheaper. But it can be, and because you know you pay. $75,000 to $100,000 for your training, and then you come out and make that sort of money. It's like it doesn't make sense. But there's not a lot of money to be made in flight schools anymore. It's tough. But I mean, when you come out, then a lot of people kind of go into tours and stuff like that. After the kind of flight training thing, you might go down to Vegas or you might go fly, you know, tours for some company, and then you can kind of, you know, you can bump up your pay to kind of maybe. I'm not fully sure. I think I would imagine, like, I never did the tour thing. I kind of got into utility pretty early. But, you know, it's a decent living wage. Some tour companies will pay more than others, but it's, you know, EMS and stuff, you're kind of getting up into the $75,000 to maybe $100,000 range when you kind of, about 4 years in or so, 5 years in, you might kind of, a lot of it's based on hours and how many hours you have. And then you can, utility seems to work out pretty nice. It's typically for power line work, if you're a turnkey power line guy, you're making about anywhere from about 160 to about 220 a year for
good
6 months.
For you guys. Shit.
Yeah. So, but, and that's a, you know, that's guys who are like, some guys like to contract so that they have their daily rates, which the companies will pay them. So, you know, the company isn't paying employment tax and stuff on you. They're just giving you your money, and then you have to end up paying your taxes yourself. Like, it's a 1099 employee. But, yeah, you can get pretty good money. If you can just walk in on any job and do that job, it's you can do pretty well for yourself, for sure.
So. It's awesome. It's really awesome.
It varies so much in helicopters. Like, you're looking at massive weights for, pay rates for airline pilots these days. And the helicopter industry isn't there. And there's nothing wrong with making $150,000 or $200,000. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But a lot of guys will leave helicopters to be making double that flying in the airlines. But, you know, I would never even contemplate flying for the airlines. I'll be flipping burgers before I'll fly for the airlines.
The only thing flying is this patty.
Yes. Pew. Yeah. No, if planes have never really been my thing. Like, it's all my time. I've got about 7,000 hours helicopter, and I've zero fixed wing time. So, and I always love the question you get asked. It's like, so everyone's like, so do you have a pilot's license as well, or just the helicopter license? I'm like, well, you know, helicopters are a little trickier to fly in the airplanes, but yeah, it's about, you know, they always think that flying the airplanes is the pilot license, and then you have a helicopter. I'm like, yeah, they're both pilot license, but yeah, it's all good. It's all what you're interested in, really, at the end of the day. So,
how did you go from, you know, like a pilot to like a co-owner, part owner of a company there, like the helicopter company?
Yeah, so back in 2000 and when was it, 2021, I had a friend that had started their own company, and it was kind of sitting there doing a couple of things with it here and there, and then we kind of just got to talking, and I was like, man, I'd like to be a part of that, and we kind of worked out a few details here and there, and kind of things just came around, and I kind of bought into it. And then, it kind of just fell in place, really. I never wanted to be an owner of a company. I always just was like, I just want to go do my hitch and go home and do that. You know what I mean? And I was always happy with that. And I guess my mindset kind of just changed. And I was like, yeah, maybe this is would be a kind of a fun thing to do. It's different, you know. And as I said, I've never been a guy to want to own my own business, really. But yeah, it all just kind of fell into place, and it felt like the couple I own the business with are good friends of mine as well. A lot of people say don't go into business with your friends, but it's worked out really good, and it's going really good. And we've turned I think we have the same kind of mentality. So we've turned it into a company where people want to come and work. And we have put together a phenomenal crew of people, both mechanics, pilots, our admin staff, our linemen. I mean, we're only a crew of 20 people right now, but we've grown that in the last couple of years from like basically 3 people. So yeah, it's become we've gotten a good name in the industry. We do good quality work, and I think that's what we prioritize. It's like we're not this money hungry company that just wants to make money, and however we make that money, we really take pride on doing a good job. I don't want to sound cliche, but yeah, that's how we roll. So you know, when you have a bunch of resumes in front of you, people that want to come work for you because they've heard of what we're like. And you know, we know a lot of guys. We've been in this industry over a decade before we had our own company. So we have, we know a lot of guys, and we kind of hire the guys that we know and trust as well. But, and we've hired people that we didn't know as well, but that had good recommendations, and they've worked out phenomenally well. And some people didn't work out. So yeah, it's good.
Everywhere you go, right?
It's everywhere you go. Yeah. You just kind of, you know, we have a vision, and we have a kind of a vibe that we want the company to be. And then, you know, you go through people, and we really have very little turnover, if any. I mean, the turnover that we've had is we've kind of made that turnover happen. But we haven't had anybody leave that we've hired that, you know, they've left on their own accord. So that's a good sign, I guess. Yeah,
it's really good, actually. Like, you know, yeah. It means you built something it's worth sticking around for. So
yeah, yeah, and that's it. You know, I think we've been in the industry long enough to see that this works, this doesn't work. How, you know, when we've been pilots on the line working in the field, it's like, okay, I didn't like when we did that. I didn't like that. That's really good. That's really so you can kind of pick and choose, and then it's like you put together a company that you think is going to work really well, and so far so good. So
hell yeah, man, I love that. I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so have you noticed, you know, like as blue collar workers, like what is the most important thing to us, right? Like what do we value?
I think quality of I take pride in what I do. I make sure that, like, you know, say when we're doing skid work in the aircraft, and a lot of the time as a pilot, I'm sitting there and all I'm doing is watching, because I'm holding position. I'm watching the linemen do their job. I'll never tell a lineman how to do his job, but newer linemen, I know the quality of work that is expected from us, and I can see when that quality might not be there. And I never want people to be like, oh, Rotor Power came in and they did it. They just, their work looks like shit. You know, yeah. I always want to make sure our shit is like tight. It looks good. And I think a lot of the guys that we have, they take the same pride. Like it's really just pride in the work we do. Yeah. It's very technical work. We're a small crew of people that do this sort of work. So, just how we present ourselves to, you know, like you said, people coming up and asking questions, and it's like, it's important to just kind of show that pride, and people pick up on that as well. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Man.
Yeah. I think just how proud I am with this sort of work is kind of one of my main things, really. So.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. And like, what do you spend? Like, you know, would you spend like good money on your PPE, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck, man. Next time you're going to buy your PPE, if you go to BrascoSafety.com.
Brasco, right? Safety, all right.
BrascoSafety.com. They're based here in Alberta, actually, on a Sherwood Park, but they ship internationally.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, the podcast is sponsored by Brasco Safety, man. Like, you know, if you want your boots or your gloves or glasses or something like that, you know? Like,
yeah.
Slide your feet into some Brasco safety boots, you know? Like, I picked up my Baffins. I wear Baffin only. So I picked up my Baffins at Brasco Safety before I actually came up here, back up here to work. You know, I needed a new pair of boots. I slid in this Brasco Safety there in Sherwood Park.
Hell yeah. I
used my code, Frost10, saved myself 10% off. Got myself a pair of Baffins.
Nice, nice.
Hell yeah, man.
Hell yeah. Because I mean, most of the stuff we wear doing this is like, you know, the FR gear and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
PPE is a big part of what we do. So yeah,
I know that you guys don't have to have FR, do you? Is that what you don't have to do FR? Or yeah.
Yeah, on most of our construction jobs and stuff, we have to do FR. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you get zapped, there's a fire. I mean,
yeah, so. Yeah, it's, well, especially doing energized work, we're typically wearing hot suits and stuff like that. So it's like, you want to create that little Faraday cage around you so you don't get your ass bit up too much.
Yeah, man, I was going to ask, like, what's the craziest thing that's happened to you while you're in the air? Like, scary, like, safety-wise or otherwise?
I mean, there's times where, like, you know, you're doing jobs, and sometimes there's so much going on, you kind of just, the LZ can change where you're taking off and landing. And there was one time where we picked up out of an LZ and I went to fly forward, cause that's kind of what we had been doing all day, actually for days before that. But we had just pulled ropes across, like just out in front of the LZ. And, you know, we lifted up and all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, there's ropes. And like, even though it wasn't that close, it was like I was heading that direction like I had been doing for multiple days. And it's just, you kind of get used to a process and then all of a sudden things change and you have to, that's a lot of the time we do when things like that do change, we'll do a new tailboard and everybody talks about it. So it kind of gets in your head. But yeah, I mean, luckily enough, I haven't had any major incidents where, I had an engine failure with a student once when I was a flight instructor, and that was
perfect time.
It's perfect. You know, I was a low time pilot and we landed on a runway. We were doing a practice auto rotation to the runway and the engine just quit. Luckily it was fine. It worked out. We landed, my training kicked in but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, we've had a lot of fatalities throughout the power line industry. I've known a lot of guys who have been killed and not always their fault, but it's, you being in that wire environment, you really just have to keep your head on a swivel and just things change a lot. Things change fast. And sometimes you're
especially used when you're flying, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you're used to doing one thing one way and all of a sudden it's different and you go to do it the way you were doing it. And it's like, oh shit, there's, you know, now there's stuff in front of me. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just kind of situation awareness is really, really important. And you just have to, talk a lot. Communication, like everybody on the ground has to just understand that if they see something, everyone says, oh, see, if you see something, say something, but it's fucking, you have to. If there's something different and you're like, that doesn't seem right, and then you don't say it, and then something happens to the dude that you should have said it to, then
it's on you. You're gonna
kick yourself in the teeth for a long time over that, like, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So oh, yeah. Just say, you know, if something doesn't feel right, and we give this tailboard, especially when we come up with a new line crew or whatever, we'll just be like, hey, if something is, and this actually, I just remembered a story I'll tell you. So one day we give this, you know, doing the tailboard, we say, hey, if you guys see anything, if you smell something weird around the aircraft, that's just like, it smells like burning oil. It smells like fuel. If whatever it is, just let us know. Just at least just say it. And I pulled up on a structure one day. The guys were coming off the structure onto the helicopter, so they were transferring across. And one guy got on the helicopter, and he was standing on the skid, and he kind of looked at me, and he pointed at his nose. And I kind of, you know, I was looking at him. He pointed at his nose again, like he was smelling something weird. And all of a sudden, I saw him look at the back, and he pointed at the back of the helicopter. So at that stage, I pulled away. I landed, like, literally right down. And I guess an oil line on the engine had broken and it was just piss and oil everywhere. So I had like, I guess there was two lines that were like touching and they had just worn a hole through each other and it just pissed oil. But luckily he had the kind of wherewithal just to say, hey, something's not right. And, you know, we put it on the ground straight away and it was fine. It worked out okay. You know, we landed it, call the mechanics in to fix it out. But it was like, if we had continued maybe doing what we were doing and he had just jumped in the back and the next guy got on, that engine could have failed. So, and
that's wild.
Now that's a whole nother problem we have to deal with instead of just saying, hey, we're just going to put it on the ground right now and deal with that. So yeah, there's, you know, if you're flying in the air, it's better to be kind of on the ground wishing you were flying than being up there wishing you were down on the ground, I guess. So
how many guys are usually like on a crew? Do you guys got like, you know, the guy working on the power line, you, and then you got spotters or like guys to like switch that guy out that's on the line? Or
yeah, it depends what we're doing. Like new construction work, we might have like 6 or 7, 8 linemen, and then the pilot. You know, we'll usually have a couple of mechanics back at the hangar, and then but one pilot will be kind of moving guys around or putting them up on ladders and bouncing around. Some jobs we might just have 2 linemen and the pilot. It just depends really kind of what the sort of work is, if it's like maintenance work or new construction where they're building new lines. So yeah.
That's pretty cool, man. Actually,
pilot, so
that's a pretty cool, like, that's a pretty cool industry, you know, just thinking about it and whatnot. And man, it's wild, you know?
Oh yeah. No, it is. And it's good. Like it's a fun industry as well. Like we have, you know, there's good banter on the radio. You know, it's a good time. And once you kind of get a clicky crew of guys that, you know, and you kind of know how you all operate, it's like, it's smooth. It usually works out pretty smooth. So yeah. It's nice.
Yeah, man. Well, brother, I don't want to keep you too much longer. It's getting pretty late over there. It's after midnight now.
Is it? It's all good. All good.
Yeah, man. But I usually like to wrap the podcast up with one last question, and that's you know, Mount Rushmore. You're not from the US, but you live there, and you're
right.
You
right.
Know, so the Mount Rushmore has like 4 of the most influential people up on the rock, right, of all time, allegedly. If you could have your own Mount Rushmore for 4 people that you look up to, inspire to be, or that inspired you, who would they be and why?
Whew, that's a good one. I'd probably throw my dad up there for sure. That's a tough question, man. There's a lot of people I look up to. I got a lot of people that I work with that I look up to, and that I've learned from.
You could throw them all up there. I don't care.
Yeah, there's a lot of people up there. There's a lot of linemen I've worked with that have been very important in my career, that have really shown me, kind of taught me a lot of things. Buddy Call Moose, he was a good lineman. Austin Day, phenomenal lineman. All these sort of guys that are just like, have really, I've stuck with along the way. My buddy that I own the company with, Philip Smith, we've worked together a long time. I've learned a lot from him too. And even though we work on the same stuff, you know, we do things differently. We balance each other out. Learned a lot from him. There was a guy that actually helped me big time back in this industry back in the day when 2008 hit and I had like nothing going on here. And my parents used to own a bed and breakfast back in Ireland. And they ended up selling it back in the day to a guy called Jim Powers. And he was an American pilot who worked in the military and done a lot of work over here. And he, this guy who his name was Jack Keenan, he's ended up staying at the Ben Breakfast. And my dad was like, hey, you know, do you know anybody in the States that could like give him a lead on some work? Cause it was pretty dire. Like, and I had low flight time and everything. And he gave me this guy's number, and Jack Keenan met me in Florida. He was a Czech airman for the FAA. And he sat down and talked with me and kind of gave me some, that dude had a massive impact on my career. He really set me straight and kind of pointed me in a direction where he was just one of those people that came in at the right time. And I, phenomenal dude. So Jack Keenan, and I got to definitely shout one out to him. But yeah, it'll be a big Mount Rushmore, man. I got a lot of people that I respect. It's really hard to name people. And I got a lot of people from back home in Ireland that have, you know, family, friends even, that I used to just you know, pointing me in the direction when I was a young kid, that I used to kind of go hiking on the mountains with all these older guys, and they all steered my life, really, you know. So it'd be a big mountain. There's a lot of faces on it. So yeah.
It's not a bad thing. Not a bad thing.
No, it's not. It's not. I'm here thinking of four faces, but no, I have a lot, man. I really do. I've had a lot of people impact my life. So yeah, it's a hard one to call out names and think of it on the spot, but yeah.
Hey man, that's the point, right? Like, hey,
yeah.
I call you out after, like, you know, we're going at it, we're chatting, and then I call you out on it, and it's like,
yeah.
Oh, and the four people, the idea of it, I guess, is like, you know, the four people that come to your mind immediately are the four most impactful, right? The four people that, like, have had the biggest influence in your life.
Yeah, and even if it's like people that were a long time ago, but they really had an impact that, like, steered your life in one direction. It's like, you know, I have a lot of people now that I rely on, but it's a different way. It's like that, there was a couple of pivotal people that really steered you in a direction, you know, and it's not taken away from the people you rely on now, not to mention them, but it's like, there's a lot of good dudes out there. I'm super happy to be a part of their working lives as well, you know, so.
That's huge, man. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love that, man. Well, dude, man, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. I appreciate it. Dude,
thanks for having me.
We're going to do it again. We're going to do it again, man.
It's been a long time in the making, man. I've been ditching you a couple of times because I just haven't been available, but I'm glad we did it. I've been looking forward to it, so.
My outlook on all that is, like, if I ask and you say, yeah, and then, like, we set up a time and it doesn't happen,
yeah.
I don't care. You know, the story that needs to be told hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And or it's in the making, right? Like, think about all the shit we talked about, you know, like how, you know, 10 years ago I was here and now I'm back. And you know what I mean?
Right.
And like, you know, and yeah, that couldn't have happened before. Last year I was miserable at my job, right? I fucking hated it, right? So, like, yeah, whatever. But like, so yeah, man, if it doesn't happen when it's supposed to happen, it'll happen for different reasons down the line, man.
Right.
Like, you know, Murphy, right. Murphy's part of the group. Right?
That's right. That's
I recorded
right.
a podcast last April, and him and I were supposed to record when he went to Vegas. Well, when he went to Vegas, he got drugged, and he had a whole, like, hangover adventure, right?
Yeah.
And and when it was a couple weeks later, we finally recorded. He's like, "Man, let me tell you what happened." Right?
This
and
that's the thing.
You know what we were supposed to record when he was there. We didn't because that happened, and then now we have another story to tell. Right, it's like, man, it happens when it happens.
It happens when it happens, man. Exactly, and there's a lot. I'm sure that I've still got a lot of good stories I could tell, but it's we'll do it again. We'll definitely do it again. And you know, if anybody does want to reach out and ask questions in specific about flying, and I'm always super open. I love answering questions.
Absolutely.
And I can be more specific with people, so feel free to hit me up. You know, I'm more than happy to answer that. So,
where can people find you on the socials?
Mostly probably Instagram, just Powerline Pilot is my, I'm not a huge Facebook user. But yeah, Powerline Pilot on Instagram, and I'll definitely get back to you. So.
Awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for coming on, brother.
Dude, thanks,
and,
man.
And as we inch closer and closer to episode 100, man, you know, like, this has been a special ride. So thank
you.
Yeah,
dude, I'm delighted for you, man. You're killing it. You're killing it. So keep it rolling. And then, hopefully we can all get together at some stage and drink some beers and have some fun.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, yeah. Brother. All right, man. Hey, stay frosty.
See you, buddy.
See you later, bye.
All right, bye. Your time.